My co-investigator on this is Claire Goosey, who's not with me today. So I'm going to talk, no disclosures. I'm going to talk about our community-based chronic disease management clinic. Is that a mouthful? And I'm going to tell you what it is. I was working in a free clinic, like many of you probably are familiar with, as a volunteer physician. The students from the medical college were there doing service learning, and we would take anything that came in through the door. And many times it was a person with chronic disease, which was out of control, and it was manifesting symptoms of that disease. Diabetics with blurred vision, or peeing every 15 minutes, or people with hypertension and headaches, what have you. So we'd give them medication, give them education, take some laboratories, and ask them to come back in a timely way. As you know, people without insurance are not lazy. They're not sitting around. They're busy. They're actually very busy. They're working many jobs, taking care of a lot of family responsibilities, and getting to a single point location for free medical care is not always easy, even if it's necessary. And so it wasn't unusual for gaps of time to go by before these patients would return, again, out of control, now symptomatic again from their chronic disease, and the cycle would repeat itself. Medications, laboratories, educations, please come back in a timely way. I got tired of seeing this. So I thought, geez, there's got to be a better way. Let's get a clinic just for chronic disease for the uninsured. I mean, the ophthalmologists, for example, are not going to run your insulin if you're a diabetic, even if you have a high sugar when you see them. They will refer you on to somebody who will. So I thought, well, simply because it's an uninsured clinic, we don't have to take on the whole world of problems, right? We can defer certain things to other providers, even if those resources are few and far between. We are not obligated to care for everything. So let's just take on a couple things and do it very well. And so we decided to take on diabetes, blood pressure, cholesterol, obesity, and tobacco. Five chronic issues. And these, you laugh. Well, that was our idealism when we started 7 years ago. And the salesman will tell you, you can't sell something if nobody's buying, right? After 3 years, nobody was buying our tobacco and obesity intervention, so we stopped that. So now it's just the top three, blood pressure, diabetes and blood, and, oh, going the wrong way, yeah. Diabetes, blood pressure, and cholesterol. As we conceived of this clinic, there were three main things that I wanted to obtain. I wanted to obtain, you know, if you're uninsured, there's a number of barriers to care. It's not just money, although that's a lot of it. And a big factor of that is doctors. So we had to get the doctors out of the equation. Doctors are extremely expensive, and we tend to just gob things up. Right? We stop processes. All things come to us. We have to make decisions and then give those answers back to people. So if you get doctors out of the equation, patients can, I think, flow more quickly, more efficiently, and far cheaper through a health system. Now, doctors are good. I don't mean to disparage doctors. I'm one of them. But I think there's a lot of things we do that are redundant, can be done at lower levels of decision making. So get the doctors out of there and put nurses in this place. And we had great examples right in Milwaukee where I work of nurse-centered clinics where it's only staffed by nurses. And they do a tremendous amount of health care for the population. So we took that nursing model and we made it work with this. And I'll go into detail in a little bit. Locations. People are busy. I'm busy. You're busy. Uninsured patients are busy. I don't want to have to go to a single spot for a single activity. I want a bundle, right? That's what shopping malls are all about. So we put our location in food pantries, thinking, correctly or incorrectly, that this would be a convenient location that people without insurance that are impoverished would already be going to. So why not make it a convenient stop for them along their way? And we also partnered with churches. Many of our patients are from the inner city of Milwaukee, and they relate to the inner city church, if not as a member or a parishioner, at least with a level of trust and recognition as a community institution, and one that's a recognizable destination. So we try to partner with them. And then lastly, because we have different locations on different days and different providers, We needed information technology that would allow people to show up at any spot, patients to show up at any spot, and get information that was pertinent to them. What their last lab values were, what their last biometrics were, where they are on their med list, right? So that real information they can use now. So those were the constraints to care that we tried to address. I keep going the wrong way. There we go. And we wanted to provide a continuous rather than episodic experience because, after all, chronic disease is a continuous animal. It needs to be dealt with on a continuous basis. It can't be episodic. Well, I talked about this to some degree, but getting into a little more detail now, we are very lucky, extremely lucky, to develop some great relationships in the community to afford this opportunity for these patients. Now, first and foremost, as I mentioned, were the churches and the pantries, because this provides space, free space, for us to go in with our nurses to provide these services. Because church basements oftentimes are unused. I mean, let's be realistic, right? And food pantries often have extra space. So we had to go in and build out some space, provide some private consultation rooms or educational rooms. We keep secure drugs in there. So, you know, some like centrifuges for lab draws. So there are some things we need secure. We build that out. That's minimal cost overall, but we don't have ongoing costs. So that was beneficial. Man, there's no shortage of nursing students that need service learning opportunities. And so we've been able to partner with a number of medical assistant BSN, RN schools and their faculty to come in and help us screen patients. We screen thousands of patients on blood pressure and diabetes and cholesterol. And we then have these students available for education, educational efforts, as well as for ongoing therapeutic measurements. When patients return, they're there to take blood pressures and to prick fingers and this and that. It's been very nice. And then our hospitals foundation been very generous. All this whole thing is free, I should add. You know, cost is a big deal. So the patients are not paying a dime for any of this, but there are costs. There's human resource costs. There's drug costs, all the drugs are given away, the labs cost. So the hospital foundation does a lot of in-kind, say the labs or they're giving the meds, as well as some human resource. And we are a generous recipient, a grateful recipient of the generous foundation Healthy Wisconsin Partnership Fund. And then protocols. Again, get doctors out of the room because doctors are very independent animals. We like to think we know what we're doing and we don't need to be told what to do. Just ask my wife, she'll confirm that. So I wrote protocols for the nurses. Now, by licensing, nurses cannot diagnose. Did you know that? I didn't know that. They can't diagnose. So they can tee everything up for a diagnosis. And then once the diagnosis is made by a mid-level provider or a physician, then they can institute the therapeutic plan. Now, many times a patient will come already diagnosed from a previous clinic, and now they're out of insurance, or they've just moved to the area and they're still getting situated, and they even have prescription bottles they can show you, or they carry a diagnosis, they're out of prison, they don't get their meds when they leave prison, so they've got to be renewed somehow. So they arrive with a diagnosis. Okay, that's a little easier. But sometimes people are screen positive and are enrolled accordingly. And the nurses then have to call me. If I'm not there, I'm rarely there, they'll call me. It'll be a very simple conversation. Dr. Sanders, we have a gentleman here. He's tested twice on two occasions. Blood pressure is above 140 over 90. We think he's hypertensive. I'll say, geez, that sounds like hypertension. Okay, doctor. And then why don't you institute the protocol? Sounds very good. Goodbye. My time, 15 seconds. All right? Doesn't take anything. I'm just endorsing a lot of common sense. Boy, if they saw me for that, it would be over $400. All right? So we're talking about really reducing costs here. And I'll show you a protocol in a second. And then the electronic medical record, we built it from Microsoft Access. Okay, that's part of the Microsoft suite in a lot of your desktops. So we got an IT guy, and he built it for us. It's nothing pretty. In fact, it's sort of clunky. But it's tracking what we needed to track. And it's housed on a secure server, and we access it over a wireless system, so we can open up a laptop anywhere in Milwaukee, or from right here for that matter, and I can get it. And it's nice. So here's a protocol, for example. So it's pretty simple algorithmic, right? You just follow the arrows in a cascading decision. Way down you go. These aren't written in stone. I just had to revise this. You know, Simvastatin came out with warnings at the 80 milligram level, so I had to switch that over to Pravacol or Pravastatin, this and that. It's I took this from various national authorities, like this one would be the American Heart Association, the JNC7, the All-Hazards study, you know, and I sort of put all these things together in my own algorithm. Here's an example of our nurses working with one of our patients taking blood pressure. So that all sounds like great. I mean, you know, but is it working? That's where the rubber hits the road, right? Is this actually doing anything for anyone? So here's who we're working with over the three-year period. From October 07 to November 2010, we had 490 unique patient visits. I'm sorry, 490 patients with over 3,000 visits. Breakdown pretty even between male and female. Sadly, Wisconsin does carry a high burden of obese and overweight patients, and our clinics are no exception. And hypertension indicated on first visit. Well, overwhelming percent present with hypertension already. They're already diagnosed. They know they have a problem. They're coming for treatment. This really surprised me because hypertension is called the silent disease. I thought, actually, that we'd be having a line of diabetics out our door when I designed this clinic. But the diabetics, as you'll see, are very few in number. I'm not sure where that is yet. And then average presenting systolic blood pressure is 151 over 92. All right. So that's who we are. Now, at 6 months, this is people that journeyed with us at 6 months. We had 67 patients. Well, that's not that many. And I have to admit that. You know, how come we don't have more? I think we serve as a bridge for a lot of people. I think people are either between insurance schemes or they're between jobs. And so they might have some time available to see us. Even if we're in multiple locations at multiple times, people are still busy. And if they're working two jobs or transportation's an issue, they got kids, whatever, they might not be able to follow up with us. Or they get a job, and then, you know, their shifts change. They're on a rotating shift schedule, in and out of prison. And frankly, many of our patients deal with chemical issues, and so their health isn't always a priority for them. Okay, so we had 67 patients who could start with us and go through 6 months. 16% of us with a blood with a hypertensive diagnosis were at their blood pressure goal at presentation. So they were on medicines, they present with medicines, they want to continue medicines, that kind of thing. At goal was 140 over 90 for non-diabetics, 130 over 80 for diabetics. At 6 months, 30 out of 67 or 45% were at goal. That was statistically significant. And there was a pretty impressive systolic blood pressure drop on average of 22 points and then a good 12-point drop. Now, we're talking about just some generic medicines here. You know, it's nothing earth-shattering. At 1 year, and I'll go into meds in a second. 1 year, we had 40 patients who could journey with us for a year, 25% of whom were at goal on first visit, and 65% were at goal in 1 year. And that was statistically significant. And I'll go into that in a little bit with some very nice average drops in systolic and diastolic blood pressures. Now, all our medicines are generic, 100% of them. All but one are on the $4 formulary at Walmart, Target, you know, these other big box pharmacies. If the patients needed to buy them. They don't. They're free at our clinic. But that's just sort of to show the point that these are the cheaper generic meds. At 1 year, 65% of our patients at goal at 1 year, the average 2.2 meds to control that. I thought that's pretty good. 100% generic. Percentage of patients needing medication costing more. Amlodipine, unfortunately, is about $80 a month. Generic. At least that's on like CanadaDrugs.com or something, or you know, these internet sites where you get bulk drugs. $80 a month is the cheapest I can come up with. Again, the patients don't cost that. They get it free. Only 15% of them required that drug. Amlodipine is the number one prescribed antihypertensive in the world. It's an expensive drug, generic or otherwise. All right. Only 15% of our patients need that. So 65% of our hypertensive patients are at goal in 1 year. 85% of those do so at an average retail cost of $8.80 if they needed to buy it. That's cheaper, by the way, than most copays. And HEDIS, familiar with HEDIS? Okay. Their 10-year average for private insured patients with more resources is 61% to get to goal. So I think we're doing a pretty good job. We're doing it on a nickel. We're doing it inexpensively in low-resource settings, and we're doing it well. So let's look at our diabetes. At 6 months, we have 24 patients presenting at less than 7% hemoglobin A1C on presentation, and 52% at 6 months were below 7%. That was statistically significant. The numbers are thin, with an average drop of 1.36 points on the hemoglobin A1C. Pretty good, but again, I'm not overwhelmed with the amount of diabetics we need that we have. I don't know why that is. Perhaps, I don't know why. I could just guess, and that would be disingenuous. So 17 patients were with us for a full year, and you can see we did not reach statistical significance at improvement there. We came close. I think the numbers are too low, and we didn't get anything on logistic regression there either. So what next? Luckily, we're expanding. I think there's a good thing. We're moving to more sites in the inner city, more church partners, and we've got to build up our diabetic numbers and reach more people. So that's it. You can reach me at my email for any questions that don't come up right now. Yes?
Do you have such a large obese population?
Yeah, I know.
How did you address that?
Well, we tried. You know, we had a free membership to an inner city or a centrally located within the inner city state of the art health club.
Did they go?
Nobody took it. After 2 years of giving it away, nobody's taken it. It's like, well, and then tobacco. We had NRT nicotine replacement there at cost. So no markup. You know, at cost. And we had all the counseling, you know, quit line, no take up. Well, NRT at cost is still expensive. I mean, people are buying, it's illegal, but people buy cigarettes one at a time or two at a time. You know, NRT is like, you know, 2 weeks at a time. So it's a big effort just to get going on it. I think that's, you know, that's a bit of it. Yeah. Yeah, we've got a community health worker level now. So these are these are the brokers or liaisons with the church communities. We've made a covenant, as we call it, with a 41 inner city African American churches to purposely target their parishioners for screening and education. We're not going to be in all 41 sites. We can't cover that much territory, but we'll use those as tentacles to bring in towards our treatment sites. You know, that's the idea. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Since you're doing phone diagnosis, how do you take care of drug interactions with the client might be taking otherwise in the history, medical history?
Right. Well, that's a good point. The nurses will tell me other meds that the patient is on or give me any pertinent history as they tee up that. Frankly, people with comorbidities, like even simple hypothyroidism, very common chronic disease, they need to go to another clinic. You know, we can't be doing everything. So we're just really focusing on those three things. And it's really hard. As a primary doctor, family doctor, I want to embrace the world. But you just have to say, no, I'm going to take that ophthalmology perspective here. I'm not going to do anything except this. Right? I'm not going to do it. And then, you know, you extricate yourself from the responsibility and it's easy. Hi.
Does this approach require any special insurance or how do you deal with the malpractice?
Right. Good question. Okay, well, these are free clinics. The state recognizes it as such, so any volunteer time given to this would be covered under the state Good Samaritan waiver. The state indemnifies the volunteer. The institutions that, such as my own, I work for the Medical College of Wisconsin, they recognize this and they extend my coverage here. Our partner, Columbia St. Mary's, puts their parish nurses in there, and so they extend their malpractice and covers that. Yeah. It's always on your mind. You've got to consider that, but it's not an issue at this point for these clinics.
The experience of the nurses, I imagine when a patient gets in the room with a nurse, they want to talk about more than just their hypertension. So when other things come
up... Oh, that's the great thing, is nurses know how to connect, right? That's the bedrock of the profession, right? And I think that's one of our greatest therapeutic allies is the nurse-patient relationship. And when you go into this clinic, it's more like a, I wish I could have a video of it. You know, HIPAA, and I mean, if Jayco got in here, we'd be just shut down immediately. Because we have open forums. There's a lot of patient-to-patient, nurse-to-group kind of stuff going on. Like, hey, Jerry, you know, are you off your sugar this week? Or are you taking your meds, Fred? And there's public declarations like that. And I think either people respond to that and keep coming back, or they're turned off by it. But the response, the energy in the room is very positive, and people, I think, respond to it very well. Yeah. We do have private consultation spaces for the more, I think, sensitive issues. But overall, it's a very embracing, open experience.
I'm just thinking of how they, as like a nursing student, somebody comes in and says, well, and I have touch pain today. I mean, I assume that there's some sort of protocol for...
Well, the faculty's there, you know.
There's somebody besides just their nurse faculty.
Oh, yeah, service learning, so they're supervised quite directly. Yeah. And then, you know, the parish nurses that are actively sort of employed on the project, they're sort of riding herd over all the activities, and they're pretty quick to get involved with that.